conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this. Violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon.
Galli means rooster in Italian, and you don't want to hear me crow.
If it looks like I haven't slept in 12 years, it's because I haven't.
The delivery. I'm extremely into it, and I'm extremely into this guest. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 217. Kate, I'm intro you, and then we gotta talk. You know her. She's the host of Reality Life with Kate Casey, which features interviews with reality stars, directors, and producers of unscripted television. You know her as a woman who supports other women, which is important and key and inspiring, and I die for her. You guys, guess who's back on the People's Couch? It's Kate Casey. Kate Casey, how How are you?
People's couch. I love it.
People's couch. I love it. I love you. I have to say, like, I'm a little extra zesty, which, you know, I just had a little quick call and I was like, I don't know what this call is. And then I had a call prior to that, which I was obsessed with. I've just like talking to a lot of different personalities today and I'm like feeling it energetically. I'm so excited to dive in with you. How are you doing? How's California? How are you? How's your pandemic?
Oh, it's fine. I mean, my oldest child, was in an epic fight in the car this morning because she doesn't understand the importance of trimming hair. This is like the Real Housewives, kind of like the real housewives shit. And she goes, I will not allow you to take control over my body and my decisions. I was like,
oh, I die for her. She's 18 now, is she? I was like, 12 going on 23.
I just want you to trim your hair so you don't look homeless.
Oh,
and she's
God,
like,
I love her.
I know what you're going to do. You're going to tell them, cut it all off. I'm like, I'm not going to tell them that. I just want you to trim your hair. I liked your hair to look trim so you don't look like Crystal Gayle. I just want you to have nice looking hair. And she's like, I can't stand it when you do this. Then I turned to my son who's in the front seat and I go, now, if I had said to you, Jack, you know what, Jack, I need you to just go brush your teeth. And you said to me, God damn it, Mom. I refuse to let you tell me what to do with my teeth. Who do you think you are? Now, would that make sense? And he's like, no, not at all. Not one bit. I was like, so that's basically what your sister is doing to me right now about her hair. And he's like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I'm like, now you know the world that I live in. And he's like, it makes no sense. I'm like, pretty much.
Wait, how old is she?
She's almost 12.
I mean, I counterpoint as someone who has not gotten their hair cut in a hot second, but will BCC Vu at Vu Salon at the Peninsula Hotel. I will see you shortly in whenever. We're in COVID times. She might be making a political statement getting her hair cut. She wants to be her own woman and have some split ends. And I have, I feel like this is a split decision. I'm okay with it.
She said,
I'm not her parent.
But. I have looked it up. And there's no truth to the fact that there's no truth to that trimming your hair will make your hair grow back quicker and stronger and healthier. I was like, I don't know what internet you're part of, but I'm part of the internet on the planet Earth. And that's facts. Wait. Facts. So I'm on the phone in the car. I'm like, facts. I'm like scrolling through videos. Facts. Facts. Anyways, that's like the Real Housewives. I'm a real housewife in Orange County. This is like what really happens.
How many kids you have?
Five.
It's like five. 18 and counting. You have five children.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure, I mean, talk about appointment TV. How do you schedule television and your life when you're in an environment where you have five kids who you are now responsible or were responsible during parts of the pandemic for like schooling and everything when it was at home?
Well, because a couple things. One, I'm an excellent multitasker and you have to be when you have a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. Two, I don't sleep a lot, as referenced in my tagline. Also, I get sent screeners, so
you can watch it whenever.
Can watch things on my own time. Also, I have a DVR, so I can watch things when I want to, and I maximize my time. So, like, I'll do the Peloton, and I'll watch a show at the same time. Wow. You know, so I just figure out pockets of time. I watch a lot of stuff when they go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just make it work.
How do you, at a certain period of time, so your podcast has been on air for a significant, how many years?
Almost 5 years in September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing. Incredible. Mazel tov.
Thank you.
A big moment, a big number. How has your experience watching reality TV and discussing reality TV, unscripted TV, changed since the beginning of watching your podcast? And now, do you watch it differently? How have your experiences as a successful podcast host talking about these shows influenced how you're watching them now?
I think in the beginning, I mean, the first episode, my first episode guest was Ashley Iaconetti, who was on The Bachelor.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Famous for crying all the time. When I pitched it to the Wondery Network, they were interested and obviously took the show. But at that time, they were just kind of like, do a lot of people watch reality TV? And I said, a ton of people watch it. And they're like, but the whole show would be about reality TV. Like, are you sure you have enough there? And I was like, I said, I could do a show every day and have something. So that just shows you how funny it is, because now there are 75,000 podcasts about reality television. Mm-hmm. And so my idea was to track down people who are on shows or who had been on shows and ask them about the experience of being on it, and to review, ask people to review episodes. So it was of reality TV. So it was like a love letter to reality TV. And I mean, I kind of feel like I kind of started the whole thing. I mean, Watch What Crappens would review Bravo shows, but I was the first person that was doing interviews with people on reality shows. Heather sometimes did it, but it was more like juicy stories. But mine was the first one that was kind of just devoted all to reality television interviews. So Crappens did reviews of Bravo shows. Heather did, like, once in a while she would interview somebody on a reality show. But mine was the first show that was totally devoted to reality television.
And I think it's so helpful. This is also why I love the podcasting space, because it's so intimate and connective. And there are an unbelievable number of podcasts. I looked it up the other day. There's like almost, I don't know if this is accurate, but almost 30,000 podcasts in the TV film category.
That's what I read.
I don't know if that's true, but the fact that even within the Bravo connected to other realms of unscripted TV or TV, there are so many different shows, or so many shows that even if it pulls in a similar kind of take, are diametrically different just because it's based on that host, that producer's voice. And so I feel like there is a place for everyone here, and also an unbelievable amount of opportunities for listeners to connect with so many different kinds of shows, because there is so much to talk about. And at the end of the day, it's all being done through the vessel, through the voice of whomever created, you know, their concept. I feel like there's so much opportunity to hear different kinds of shows, even when discussing the same topic, which I don't think that exists in any other real realm, not as consistently as it does in podcasting. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that people love podcasts and love reality TV. There's a multitude of shows, and everybody has their own lens through which they watch a show. I think most of those shows are probably just the guest or the guests kind of riffing on their thoughts about a show.
Yeah.
But I don't think there are many like mine where I'm doing interviews every single episode. And I have two episodes a week, and I have up to four guests that week, two in each episode. So like today's episode, I have The Bachelor Peter reviewing the Scary Island episode of Real Housewives of New York.
Oh my God.
And also the executive producer and creator of Couples Therapy on Showtime. And that's in one episode. And then Josh Kriegman. And then on Wednesday I had Lala Kent and Brian Moylan. So yeah, I'm doing so many interviews. So it's kind of, even within TV and film, if you like shows, there's so many different kinds of shows.
Exactly.
So it's like a poo-poo platter. It's seafood platters. Here, there,
totally.
Everywhere.
Totally. Which is great.
You know what's different, though, is like...
Tell me.
It's kind of weird. Like, it was so hard for me to convince people in the beginning to come on my show. Because People did not know what a podcast was. Literally mm-hmm. asking, what is a popcast? I'm like, it's a podcast. I had to show people mm-hmm. how to access a podcast on their iPhone. So now it's different because everybody kind of knows what a podcast is, finally. But I still think that people still thumb their nose down at it, especially people who mm-hmm. work at certain networks, like Bravo definitely thumbs their nose down it. And I watched the Summer House reunion, and it's like they're all pissed off about interviews that Hannah did on podcasts. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, Hannah. Like, you're making us look bad. But, I mean, it's sort of like if you went to a TV show, like some TV shows are to have a different spin than others. Like, mm-hmm. But it's surprising to me that there are actually over 2 million podcasts now. That number skyrocketed during COVID, but that we're still considered to be like a joke of a, it just shows you how far behind the times are people in decision-making positions at certain networks don't value a platform that's so widely used. Podcasts sell books, by the way. Go on. And I've heard this from publishers. They're like,
podcasters. Podcasts. When someone goes on a pod to promote.
If I have an interview with somebody who wrote a book and I interview them, that sells more books than if they go on like a television show. That's what publishers are telling me.
I believe it. And there is something to be said when people feel like they are giving permission for access to, you know, talent person A, because there's going to be an article written for them wherever at whatever outlet. And then there's the idea of a video piece, whether it's being done for an actual network show or a streaming situation or whatever else, where they feel like, oh, it's video. So it mm-hmm. I can see the value. I can read the value, where it feels like the value is set in the format of the product. And podcasting seems to be almost on that last leg of people not understanding that there's just as much value, if not more, in the intention. And podcasting is harder. It is not, I don't want to give a critique of the difficulty, but just to say that podcasting does come with difficulty, and it's to engage with people and have consistency when it comes to listenership, let alone the quality of conversations in long form format, especially if they're stream of consciousness, which we both have, where you're really engaging with people, that can be, it is a difficult muscle to form, create, and make sure hopefully becomes stronger over time. And it's something that needs to be exercised. And yet, when we look at the access that shows or outlets have, often podcasters are the ones who are kind of at the, you know, end of the herd. And it's unfortunate, but I do think it's also changing, especially because of COVID and because, you know, podcasters, I do think, have influence. You know, we've seen influence exist with our shows, with things that we're talking about, and the ways that we've come together just as women content creators. I think it's really important that we support and amplify each other and work together, because our work matters. You know, our work brings value. People who listen to us know that. It's just a matter of hopefully not having to convince others that this is a thing, you know. And it's difficult because we're talking about, you know, with Andy's Girls, primarily Bravo and the experiences of these women's lives and behaviors, and how our own journeys as people and as women influence the perspective of how we're viewing things on TV. And it's important, I hope, that for the listeners, I mean, they're listening, they're choosing to listen to a podcast hosted by a woman who is currently speaking to another. It's important that when we're deciding what podcast to listen to, especially if the topic is stories about women, the hope is that, you know, people really make that conscious decision to listen to women when discussing women, mm-hmm. because we bring a lot of value based on our experience. And a lot of that is based on our gender, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It's important. So that's why I'm so excited to talk to you today. I have to say, because you brought it up, that I do want to get your thoughts on Summer House. Because I watched part two this morning. And apologies to Atlanta. I know that things happened. No apologies to Dallas, who I hope never happen again. Certainly not in the format that's happening now. But I look at Summer House, I'm like, y'all are giving me exactly what I need.
You know what?
Which is I Pat? Think... No. Oh, my God. Casey, what? Tell me. Talk about a counter.
I don't think that show's
that great. Wow. Are you spiritually trimming my hair right now? Is that what's happening?
I just don't.
Are you telling me?
It's like kind of lost its way. In the beginning, it was great because they were all real friends and they worked in the city. And it was truly a Summer House. A Summer House is like... people in the city are like going to go, they're going to like have a great weekend, go back to the city. And now it's like people that were friends mixed with people that were hired because they might make good TV. They're, you know, several years apart in age. They don't share the same friend circles. They're paid friends. And it's obvious. And also they don't have real jobs anymore. Their job is to be on the show. So it's not like it used to be. I like the idea of Summer House, like the people who are cramming numbers, who are stressed out. They want to go and let loose, and they may or may not hook up with a roommate. I also don't, like, no disrespect to Kyle and Amanda, but, like, I don't want to watch a married couple on a television show. You know? I just don't. I want to see people who I am married. Like, I want to see singles. I want to see that window of the world. People that are single, living, you know, in the city that need to get out of Dodge. So, no, I think it's lost its way. It's not as interesting for me anymore. Sorry.
How do they not... I mean, these are people who are paid to be on a reality show. Why is that a bad thing that their lives have
because
changed?
Because it's
the show
all
has?
About the show now. So they've given up the jobs that they had when they first were cast. Their job now are reality stars. I don't want to see reality stars. I love the concept of these are people we're just going to film, you know, on the weekend when they're leaving their real work. That's the dynamic has shifted where they're reliant on the show for everything because that's their sole income. So, you know, Hannah, yeah, she has a podcast, but she's really... she worked at Betches when she started. First of all, I shouldn't even refer to Hannah because she was like brought. I like Hannah, but it's like, in what world would Hannah be friends with Lindsay? Lindsay is a publicist, yes, but most of her job is being on a reality show. Carl used to work in dental sales. So it was like, that's fun to see the dental sales guy hanging out in the Hamptons with his friend that also lives on the Upper East Side. And now it's like they all quit their jobs and now their bios on their Instagram is like on Summer House and now they're doing Winter House. And it's like they're not what they were. I don't know.
How is that different, though, from Real Housewives? Because you can only have your first season once when you are.
Well, I do think that's a problem. I think that's a problem for Real Housewives, too. I like it when somebody is not. The Real Housewives is just another part of their life, but it isn't their full and sole life. So when a housewife is like, they're totally consumed by the show, all they want to talk about is the show. And I know them in personal life, and a lot of them are like that, where it's like everything revolves around them being on a show. It doesn't revolve around the business that they own or their children or their charity work. It's like they're totally consumed by the show. It makes it less fun to watch because I want to be a voyeur looking into someone's life. And I want to watch somebody who's living in this world, not somebody who is performing as a cast member on a reality show.
But so much of Bravo specifically is about performance. Like, how is that sustainable?
I know. I think that's a problem that their network's having, and I think that's why a lot of people are not watching as much. I think they're more interested in seeing other people's lives and other networks and streaming. I think that's why people started to watch 90 Day Fiancé, because they were like, oh my God, these are people who are, and that's why people stop watching some 90 Day Fiancés, because it was like Larissa is clearly came on the show to be a TV star. And now the whole show is, how do I play up and get more memes about me because I'm an over the top person? Versus in the beginning seasons, it was like, this person lives in the world and it just happens the cameras are following. And that's the problem. It's not sustainable. It's just not.
It's so interesting because I always think of like the imaginary extra character, like on Sex and the City, when they're like, the fifth person was New York City. We love New York. I feel like so much of the extra housewife or the extra cast member on Summer House, whatever, is the idea of celebrity and fame. And I find it interesting watching that intersect with these people as they change, as they grow on the show and become famous and become potentially, you know, rich maybe, or this, temporarily is, rich, whatever, as a result of it.
This is why Lisa Barlow is a better person to watch than Jen Shah, because Jen Shah showed up to be a television star and it is consumed by the show. Her whole life is the show. But mm-hmm. when you watch Lisa Barlow, you know, she has a job, she has a family. She's just being filmed for 3 months. After the cameras mm-hmm. leave, she's still a housewife running her family, running these businesses. So we're getting a snapshot into someone's life. And then we can circle back a year later and see how it's changed. But I don't want to watch somebody who's like, you know, here's an example. My friend Matt is a casting agent who casts for Real Housewives. And he always says, I know someone's totally wrong when the first call I make to them, they're like, you will not believe the day that I just had. And he's like, well, you're not right for the show. Because what he wants is to call someone and go, hold on, Matt. Bobby, get your shit together. You know, Ellen, did my office call? Did my office call? Well, I can't take that call. I'm sorry, Matt. What? Okay, where are we? Because they live a very full life. And the show can come and go and it doesn't matter. But when somebody is reliant on the show for everything, that's when it becomes a problem.
I hear you. I see your point on Summer House. When it comes to sustainability, though, there is an element of shame that's used as like the weapon of choice. I'm going to shame my fellow cast member through their marriage or sexuality, sexual identity, wealth or lack thereof. And it does feel like on some of these shows, if you do have a full life, it is used as a weapon to shame. I think
give me an
a
example.
Little bit.
Give me an example.
Tiffany on Dallas.
She's a great housewife. You know why?
She's
that.
Why?
That show can come and go. It doesn't matter. She still works a full-time job, raising daughters. She has friendships. It doesn't matter if she's on the show or it isn't, because she's a fully she's a busy woman.
Forms. Yes, but
somebody like Cameron, I don't really like watching anymore, because I feel like she thinks she's a television character on a sitcom. Here's the difference. Like that Tiffany is a real housewife to me. That's somebody who is multitasking. She's lives a very multi-layered life. And then Cameron is performing as an actress on a reality television show.
I hear you. My point is that Tiffany is fantastic because she has all these other things, but it's not sustainable because all of those other things are being used as her cast members as a weapon. They have weaponized her job as a doctor. They have weaponized
the
life that
who?
But
who?
Everybody else in the cast, I think.
Well, they're gonna go,
Deandra,
because that's not the way. That's not what people want to watch anymore. Sorry.
I don't know. Some of them may go for reasons relating to that or not, but I don't think that Tiffany is going to stay. I think the people who have these other lives understand that they have other value and don't need this kind of show. They
She'll
are
stay.
A very rare, small group.
She'll
and
stay.
I don't.
And the others will go.
I don't know that she will.
She'll stay.
I genuinely don't know that she will.
Because they will see to it that she stays. They want to keep her
They want to keep women like her. They want.
But if she has enough money and enough interest in other things, she is a successful doctor. She does not need the check. She might be uncomfortable with the form of celebrity that she now has, the narrative that she was sort of forced to participate in that's kind of been used against her, including during the reunion. Because she doesn't need the show, she genuinely may not stay. And then what happens?
She'll come back. She'll come
Listen,
back.
Listen, Kate, you know people, that I am not.
People get this experience. She gets to connect with people all around the world. She's got a new girlfriend, Crystal, who's on Beverly Hills. She has a shared experience with her that she can now lean on. Why would she walk away? It's a new challenge. It's a new exciting opportunity journey challenge that could lead to other opportunities.
If I was a woman of color on a show where I was the only woman of color and was being told
they're going to get rid of those other, the ones that called her racist, they'll get rid of them.
Cam is not going anywhere. I guarantee you. I honestly don't know that she should, but I do think she should. I think that we are in a position in Dallas right now that is entirely unsustainable, which I think we would both agree with. But I do not know. I would bet more that Tiffany is going to go than if she is going to stay, because my guess is when they do a cast call, which they're surely discussing right now, Cam is not going anywhere because there is value that she brings to the idea of Housewives in the caricature of it all, noting that she is in no way grounded. That's probably the value that she brings, is that she is a caricature. She is a cartoon. But if I was Tiffany looking at that and knowing, do I want to put myself in a position where I'm being forced to film with this person? I don't think I would. But
the network's going to go, we will do everything in our power to keep Tiffany Moon on the show. And if that means Cameron has to go and that's what Tiffany wants, then that's what's going to happen.
You know why I disagree with you? Because I think the network would already be thinking that if they are, and none of that was seen in the edit or moderation of the reunion. Tiffany was left to fend for herself. There was no counter. When Cam was literally saying, you expressing and illustrating your experience with your mother is a form of racism. You are the person who is racist, not me. There was no counter to that. And if I was in a position where I wanted to protect a new housewife, noting the pressure the network is probably hopefully under, or their concern about how they're being portrayed strategically in a corporate sense as a brand, whatever, I would think that they would make sure to counsel somebody to stand up for this and not just let it hang there to dry.
I think that they're more apt to, at this point in 2021, given the amount of press they've received about how bad they are at having diverse casts, that they're having, I know that they're having conversations, and they want women, especially like Tiffany Moon. She is the modern housewife.
Yes.
Cameron is not. She's not.
She doesn't need to be modern, though. There's a place for all different kinds of housewives. The ones that are focused on fame. The ones that are completely outside any form of reality. Cam has a place there.
This show's been on for 15 years. It's like The Bachelor. It came crashing to a halt because it has not modernized. That The Bachelor, when you see it come back as The Bachelor with a guy, is going to look so different than as it was season one. And I'm telling you, that's coming for Real Housewives too.
I don't disagree that modernization needs and should happen. And I completely agree that Tiffany is like an exemplary housewife and someone that we can look at as an example of the value that housewives can bring in discussing women's lives. And I also think that Cam's life has a lot of value and interest in the choices that she's making to be a cartoon are hers to make, as frustrated as I am about the narrative that she's presenting and her deep interest in maintaining any semblance of ignorance and presenting that as valuable fact. Like, the ways that she's trying to shame Tiffany for helping her understand what words mean is fascinating and distressing all at once. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, as far as like the network's hope to keep Tiffany, I agree that I'm sure they're thinking that. I'm sure they're hopefully expressing that to her, but I don't think that they are showing to us that they care as much as they hope that we infer.
What I've also learned from executive producers, knowing them, hearing them talk, mm-hmm. they don't really care about viewer input.
I essentially agree with that.
And so
essentially,
as much as people are complaining about all these things during reunion stuff, they just don't. They turn. In fact, I have an interview next week where he says, I don't go on Twitter. It doesn't matter to me. I totally tune that out. It does not affect the way I shoot. I'm here to shoot women's lives. And if I start listening to how people think, it's that process of filming is not authentic anymore. But I do think that the network is up against a wall, because all of the shows on networks like 90 Day Fiancé, The Bachelor, etc., after a global pandemic, the way the world is changing, they all have to think about how to make their shows new and fresh. There's too much competition for viewers. And I think that the Housewives lost their way for a long time, where it was supposed, you know, Orange County was so much fun when you saw Vicky in her office working or yelling at the guy with the van. This is a family van, because it was like you were peeking through the bushes at somebody living their life. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, you know, they have a total glam team that's even like exposed now, breaking the fourth wall, where you see people getting like over the top makeup, and it's like it's lost its way. It's no longer about complicated women and how they're trying to make it through every day, and more about like over the top characters on a sitcom that just happens to be called a reality show.
I just think that life has changed so much in 15 years. That's where
you know what?
Heading.
And people want authentic storytelling. That's why you're seeing the amount of the numbers are going up for docuseries. They're going up for documentaries. People are less interested in reality shows as they just are.
I mean, listen, I love a docuseries. I swallowed season 2 of Couples Therapy whole. Swallowed it whole. I watched all 8 episodes essentially at the same time. I was like,
people would feed me more of this. People would rather watch that now. The trend is more for that and less about Cameron buttering her peanut butter sandwich for her kid, and Court walks in and she's like playing up to the camera. People are just disinterested in I'm telling you, it's going to trickle down, and you're going to see different housewives over the next year.
Well, I mean, we're seeing changes happen in real time with franchises. Let's talk about the first Black housewife on Real Housewives of New York in 13 seasons. The premiere was this week. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about Ebony K. Williams' premiere episode of New York and how that storytelling happened?
I love her because she's really, to me, a New York woman. I mean, I don't live in New York. You live in New York, but my sister lived in New York, and she is like, that's when you see a franchise, you want to think like, yes, that represents that city. Like, I could see that person living there. That's what's going on. New York is filled with people who have like 16 jobs under their title, who don't sleep much, who are fast moving, fast talking, incredibly clever street shooters, right? Very sophisticated.
There needs to be a survival instinct
it's
to
like,
get through the days.
And sophisticated too. And I like her because although the other cast members are funny, I think they lost a little bit of that over the course of a couple seasons. Like, it came more slapstick and like, oh, you know, Sonya's on all fours again, and like her tooth came out, and that's funny. But what makes Real Housewives of New York so great is that those women are so specific. Mm-hmm. And Dorinda is like a New Yorker to me. Like, she's a New Yorker. She doesn't fit in Orange County. She would never fit in any of these places. She's a New Yorker. And I like Ebony because I'm like, okay, I can sit here in Orange County and it reminds me of home. Like, I know women like that. So I'm excited about that. But also it's like, it's insane that show's been on for so long and there was never one woman of color. Like, what? New York is one of the most diverse cities in the whole, it's a global city. And like, we didn't even have one. It's insane. But I have had like the great privilege of listening to Ebony on Clubhouse for you know, a couple months before she premiered. So I was already like, oh my God, this is great, because I love to hear her hot takes on things. Mm-hmm. And I think that she gives me a little bit of that Bethany feeling, of like, let's cut the shit. That, like, that's a New York woman. Like, let's get straight to the point, but also call you out on your bullshit. And that, we've been missing that for a little bit. Because Bethany brought that really in the early seasons, and then, you know, she left, and I think Ebony's going to be like that. So I'm excited for that. But also, you know, a modern show. I mean, she's walking through Central Park and she has the names of the five.
Central Park Five.
On her sweatshirt. And you're like, yes, in the year 2020, 2021, we are being confronted by what we have ignored in this country. Mm-hmm. And she is... And she's doing that, and I love it. I'm like, yeah, I'm excited that the show's getting more back to substance. Who we are as women in the world, and what is important to us, and what, you know, and less about, like, surface stuff. I think, so anyway, I think that this is a long-winded answer to your original question. I think this season of Real Housewives of New York, it will be very funny, but it also will be substance in a way that I think a lot of the franchises are lacking. Dallas is an example of that.
I completely agree. I think there's also a difference between being funny and having a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I like about Ebony is that it appears that she has both. And I think that's helpful. I think it's incredibly helpful that we had a scene on New York this week, the first episode with a full-time Black housewife, where there were two Black women and they were the only two people in the scene, where it felt like it passed. You know, there's the Bechdel test, which people talk about a lot of, does this movie or piece of whatever TV, whatever it is, feature two women who are speaking to each other and ideally like not about a man. And we had that with two Black women in a scene sitting on Ebony's bed, drinking delicious, you know, rosé, and talking about credit scores and talking about their lives and futures, and doing so in a way that was incredibly engaging. I think that's incredibly important. I think the fact that she, you know, her very first scene, I mean, there was no way for her to know this would be her first moment shown on the premiere episode, is her walking with a hoodie, a sweatshirt that has the names of the Central Park Five, which you just referred to, five men who were wrongfully convicted of rape against a white woman, which galvanized the New York City and showed just abject racism during the time of the case itself and the years prior and frankly the years following. And it's incredibly important that she was, you know, there. I would think, again, as a white woman, but I would think that the pressure a woman of color, a Black woman, must feel going into this cast where you have a lot of different personalities with a lot of insensitivities, shall we say, and feeling potentially the burden of that, of like, I now have to represent because I'm the first person breaking through in this way on this franchise. Am I going to have to represent and carry the burden of representing a race of people? Or, mm-hmm. you know, like, is that, am I going to be stereotyped by the viewership in that way, even if the cast does not? And for her to take that on in such a way that she's like, let's not forget what's happening in the world through the names of the Central Park Five, I thought that was incredibly powerful. And it also felt like she was winking to us and saying, this is who I am, so know that from the jump. Like, we're going to talk about whatever, but I'm also going to bring in through the names that I'm representing on the apparel that I'm wearing that the camera has no choice but to show. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure everybody is clear. This is the standard that I'm bringing, which is incredibly powerful, not just for New York, but any other franchise.
Isn't it great to have cast women that are interesting and interested in the world versus casting women who just want to talk to you about their like little Yorkie and their bags? Like, that's not interesting to me.
I get that it's not interesting to you. I think that there's a place for both of them. I want to see house tours. I want to see these women in these big spaces. I'm okay you with can't. Seeing women dress, get
yeah,
dressed
but,
up with
but,
glam. I think both have a place.
But you've got to have substance. You got to go, okay, I have this now, but mm-hmm. Sometimes I lay awake. I'm like, what if my husband gets a heart attack, or I didn't come from this, or I do come from this and I'm always stressed about how do I keep my kids grounded. I need some stimulating conversations. You can have the flash, but you also mm-hmm. have to give some interesting insight into the world.
You know what I would say is that substance comes in all forms. And, you know, I look at certain shows and there are women that I would be like, I don't feel like there's a lot of substance there. But they show me vulnerability, and that I love. So that even if you're presenting yourself as a cartoon character, there are still stakes here because you are still showing me a window. And the problem that I think Dallas is facing is
there's
no vulnerability there, and there are no stakes. So like, I'm supposed to care that Cam and Court are selling their house and buying a new one, but they're going from one beautiful home to another. I'm not understanding why this is an example of her vulnerability, aside from the fact that he's not talking to her.
Oh my God. So gross.
And what's Stephanie? Stephanie is doing great things with charity work, which is great, but that's not a personality. That is a mitzvah. So where is the person behind this? Mm-hmm. And you can't hide behind the idea of being a supportive friend.
Wasn't there something weird with her all season? Like, I can't put my finger on it, but like, there was something off with her this season.
She was not present.
No.
It did not feel like she was present.
Yeah, I was like, where are you? Yeah.
The only time I got a sense of anything was when she was saying to Carrie with that, I felt so bad for that gentleman, Charles, I want to say his name is, or George, I'm sorry for forgetting, but on the Oklahoma trip or whatever, when she said to Carrie, like, you are not being nice right now, you are being rude, there were little flashes where I was like, oh, she has an opinion, she has a voice, but that's not a vulnerability, that's base level accountability, that's not anything, that's not a storyline.
I wonder what was going on, really going on with her, because she wasn't there.
I think a part of her not being there was the fact that Brandy was entirely checked out, and sometimes they united as one, which also meant that they did not need to be individual people. And if Brandy is completely checked out and Stephanie was used to that dynamic, she's then struggling because she's like, what is my place here as a person outside of my friendship?
So weird and depressing, right?
I mean, it's like somebody, I didn't ask me anything on Instagram yesterday, and somebody was like, how do you, you know, what's your perfect cast for season 6? And I said, to throw it in the ocean, like Atlantic Pacific or choose a pond. Like, I'm not thinking that this is a changeable, fixable thing. And I also think as great as Tiffany is, and as interesting as I think she is, and as complicated as I think she is, and I would love to see that. Do I think that she should be in the cast next year? Like, as a human person, I can't look to her and
not
be like,
with that one. Yeah.
You know, like, this is a great idea for you to do that.
But they,
I
need to get rid of
it.
All of the other ones and keep her. But I also feel the way about Orange County.
Keep Deandra.
I'm just like, Orange County, end it. Forget it. Done.
I didn't watch last season. Would you suggest that I ever do at any point?
I don't think that you missed a damn thing.
Yeah. That's yeah. what I think too.
I mean, there's just no one that's like captivating.
Mm-hmm. I heard Gina had a strong season, but that's a relatively low bar.
I'm not stimulated. I would rather watch a docuseries.
With Orange County, and you're friendly with current and former cast members, from a casting perspective,
I tell you the funniest thing?
Tell me everything.
Anthony was visiting this week.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to, like, let's go down to Big Corona. I'm going to show you the beach. So we're standing there, and I run into Leslie Bedore. And as I'm talking to Leslie Bedore, Kelly Dodd walks past. I was just like, this is hysterical.
Wait a second. So, and then the night before
I had dinner with Bronwyn, and with my friend who I think might be the new housewife or a new housewife. So it was just hysterical.
Okay, we're gonna go through.
I mean, I live about a mile and some change from the Quiet Woman. I mean, I'm like, Terry Dubrow's office is around the corner from my house. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm here.
Are you friendly with Leslie Bedore?
I am. Yeah.
Why? Why? Is she an interesting person?
We have friends in common. We have a friend in common, Jackie. And Jackie introduced us. Yeah, she's nice. I mean, I'm not talking to her about Shannon Bedore.
Right. Of course not.
I talked to her about, you know, kid stuff and like school stuff. And she just she just had her baby. So I was asking her about the baby and.
What happened when Kelly walked by? Did you say, oh, hey, Kelly, what's up?
Anthony said, oh, my God, that was Kelly that just walked by. And I was like, oh. And then we walked down to the beach, and she was kind of ahead of me with Rick. But, yeah, it was just a happenstance. It was quite funny.
With Bronwyn, you go to dinner with Bronwyn. What's happening with Bronwyn?
I went to dinner with her on Monday with Sean. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And... So Andy said at one point online, you know, people including Meghan McCain and Evan Ross Katz were on Twitter saying this needs to be canceled. And Andy responded back and was like, reboot. What do you think? What's the sense? You know, Bronwyn has been seen in stage paparazzi shots with a cast member from Selling Sunset. There's
an
idea she might cameo there.
They're opening up Oppenheimer. They opened it up. Well, it's like almost open. It's almost done. They rebuilt. It was like a skateboarding business that they opened an Oppenheimer office. So there's going to be Selling Sunset OC. So they had her come and like look at a property for like a crossover scene. Sean and Bronwyn are co-parenting, so they're not together.
Uh-huh.
But they spend a lot of time together because they co-parent and they're really close friends. So I went out to dinner with them, and you know, they're not a couple, but they're like, they hang out. So I think for other people it's confusing because they see them together, but they're not together as a couple. Does that make sense?
It totally does.
So my friend Anthony was in town, so that's why he was like, oh, I'll come out to dinner and hang out with Anthony too. So we were all there, but they're always around each other because they have seven kids. So they're like, I mean, she was at parent teacher conferences from like 10 to 1:30. I mean, so I know the women in town more for things that don't have to do with the show. Like I'm talking to Bronwyn about like camps and school stuff, and I'll see Kelly at Whole Foods and I'm like, oh, what's going on with Jolie? And I don't talk to them about show stuff,
Which I completely understand and respect, and I think that that's helpful with friendship boundaries.
And I think that they like that about me because I think that a lot of people that are in their orbits only talk to them about the show. Like Bronwyn has one friend where I'm like, I cannot talk about the show. Like I can't, like I'm going to like croak because there are people that become so fascinated by it. And like I was talking to Alex from Evolution about that, and we were laughing because a lot of housewives call me for advice, and it's because I have like one foot in the door, one foot out. So I'm like in their world, but I'm not in the world, and I don't want to be on the show. So the problem is a lot of these women, they become housewives and then they like being on the show and they get attention. And then they accumulate these people who are friends with them, but they only want to talk about the show. And it's like they can't ever escape. So it's like if you ran into Bronwyn and you're like, you know, let's talk about the last book you read. They're like, oh, my God, thank you. Yes, thank you. Because it's not about the show. You just, you know what I mean?
I completely hear you and understand, but like just something back to the show. Do we think, what do we think is going to happen with this whole?
They're going to have a lot of new, they're going to have new faces. They're going to have a lot of new faces this season, I'm sure.
Okay, so I have two questions. The two most important questions to me from a cast perspective.
Yeah.
Is Kelly coming back? And
probably.
And if Kelly is back, will you, what do you think that says about the network's interest in whatever the hell that they're trying to say they care about?
I don't know.
She's the she is the most polarizing housewife from the perspective of
I don't know.
Racism and the spread of disinformation during a global pandemic. There is no one that is a greater example of the lack of accountability or the ways that accountability is shown as a narrative arc with black housewives versus ones who are non.
But to your point, they keep somebody else like Cameron. So why wouldn't they keep Kelly?
I think it is an entirely different level.
But you just said Cameron is, says these appalling things and she's still, and you enjoy watching her.
I think so that Cameron needs to be held accountable by other people on the cast. With Kelly, I think she has said things that are life-threatening that may have killed people when it comes to advocating, making fun of people wearing masks, saying racist things about Black Lives Matter protesters, doing so at length.
I think that,
and the network pretending that they care. I think that accountability needs to happen with both of them.
Yeah, I think that the network just wants to make TV that people watch. I think, and I think they think that people, there are a segment of people that like them. I'm not saying that I enjoy watching that. Clearly, you don't either. But, and that's what I think is so weird, because the producers don't really care what we think. And the network has to modernize their shows. I think that's what the whole thing, like, is so weird. This is like, there's a disconnect. Because what we want, they don't seem to care, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I want conservative voices, as I'm sure you do. I know you do. I want conservative voices on Housewives. I want the voices of women that I politically disagree with. When a housewife says something as a part of a narrative arc on Housewives that I think is racist, I want them to be held accountable, not just by the person that they are trying to marginalize or saying that thing against. Like, I want other people to hopefully stand with them, which I don't think should be considered a political action. I think it should be considered
human,
just basic human. I think that's human support. With Kelly, I put her in a universe that nobody else is in. I wouldn't put Cam anywhere near it. I think Kelly is an aberration of a housewife, and it makes me nervous if she's back, not only as a viewer. I don't think production can or should care about viewers' opinions. I think the network absolutely has to at a certain point, because Bravo is so specific to the Bravo universe, which is in many ways driven by conversation of content creators. And if you're hearing from so many people that they are no longer able to cover or discuss a certain show because of a woman's repeated consistent racist behavior that she has never once, not once, been held accountable for publicly or privately, from what we know, that is a problem. It's something I can't talk about.
Maybe they do have conversations with them that we just don't know about.
I'm not seeing a change in behavior, so the conversation means nothing to me. That to me means that they are whispering to her racism is bad, and they have absolutely no care in the world about her continued consistent racism and racist behavior, because she represents it online at such a frequent level that it makes people in the content creation community uncomfortable discussing her because they don't want to participate in a narrative that feels wrong. It should not feel dirty. If it feels dirty and it's like performative dirty, I have no problem with that. I do have a problem with amplifying the voice of someone who I think is dangerous. I genuinely think that Kelly is dangerous. The things that she says is dangerous. And I do not believe that keeping her on the show is a good idea from the sense that I don't think people will be interested in discussing it. Not the people that they usually care about, who are the content creators who represent groups of viewers.
I don't think they care about content creators. I think they care about ratings. And I think that they look at
the ratings were terrible.
I think they look at someone's social media and how many followers they have and whether or not that's going to get them. I think those are the things. I don't think they care about us or our opinions. It sucks.
I honestly almost don't care about that aspect. I do care about the future quality of the show. It is irreparably harmed with her participation because of her behavior and her incapacity to control herself and her urges to damage people through her warped sense of what is humorous or fun.
But I think that they also see that there are a ton of people that like her. There are people in this country that love her.
And I think that those people should be represented. I think that they should. I think that they are in different housewives. I do think that from the perspective of, are people going to watch Kelly again, or is she now, you know, OC needed to be rebooted unrelated to Kelly, but Kelly signifies a different kind of reboot.
I think if they add a bunch of new housewives, the dynamics in the show might change and you might hear different kinds of conversations and you might hear people being confronted on things that they've said or done. But, you know, maybe we should all kind of just watch the first episode of whatever they create and kind of, you know, assess then.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think a part of the problem is that there is no counter and the network seems interested in countering certain kinds of housewives, but not others. And I think that's the primary WTF when it comes to Kelly.
One of the girls that I know that they were looking at would be really interesting. Would make
is that Noelle, Noella?
Yes, but another person too.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Kay Casey, you're gonna need to come back because every time you're on Andy's Girls, like, what, I get hot like, and bothered.
Do we go on here or anything? I feel like did I accomplish anything?
You accomplished so much. These are the kinds. Yes, my darling. I feel like these are the kinds of conversations that are important and interesting to have. I think we don't need to talk every week about what happened on New Jersey, which I will be doing on a Patreon episode because there's so much to say about Dolores. Oh my God, and Frank and David, I love it. Also, sidebar, David slid on the couch in the scene and I watched that a couple times. I think I have like a very big crush on him. It was unexpected, but it is a journey that I am on.
David's just like my husband. He doesn't want to be on TV. He loves her. He loves her children.
That's enough.
Like, he doesn't want to be a TV star. Frank is a great TV star. David wants to help high-risk women, high-risk pregnancies. He does the Lord's work.
David does not need to give me a Porsche. He just needs to give me a call.
Why does he have to get married? If they're not going to have kids together, what's the point of getting married?
Because she maybe wants to get married, but she's okay not making that decision right now. She might need it for herself, and it's good for her. And that's a decision that she said on the after show. Yeah. She's like, at the end of the day, if I want to get married and that is like the thing that I need and he can't give that to me, that is not my loss. That's his. Yeah. And I think that that's really important at the end of the day. The women are trying to shift the narrative to it being something that is lacking from her life. And what she is trying to say is like, this is an active choice that I'm making. And at the end of the day, I'm going to be the one making it. Like, don't say that I am in a position where I'm being harmed or something.
I'm also mindful that behind the scenes, you know, maybe she does say different things. We don't know. Maybe when the cameras go away, maybe she's like, you know, I swear to God, he told me that we would get married and now he's not. And we don't know.
We don't know, but I need you to come back ASAP because okay. we need to unpack it more. Kate Casey, where can people follow you online and listen to Reality Life with Kate Casey?
Reality Life with Kate Casey, anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Reality Life with Kate Casey Facebook group, Instagram at Kate Casey CA, TikTok, It's Kate Casey, Twitter, ooh. Kate Casey.
Yes.
Patreon.com/KateCaseyBonusEpisodes. I've got, you know what? I've got to go to Patreon. Like, I just did one about the Josh Duggar charges, which is really good. Because you hear all about it. And then I'm doing one today about the Billie Eilish documentary.
Oh, which is so good.
Yeah, I didn't like her the first half. I have to tell you, I didn't like her.
Oh my God. Then I started listening to her music after.
Then the second half, I was like, okay, now this is okay. But I didn't like her at the beginning. I cried at the end.
Speaking of Patreon, patreon.com/AndysGirls, the number one way to support the podcast, aka yours truly. You get exclusive bonus episodes. I have the craziest, famous, fabulous long form satchel that I'm going to be unpacking on the next upcoming episode, and we'll be talking more about New Jersey and possibly a little bit New York and some other stuff. Remember Atlanta? That's a thing that exists. Patreon.com/AndysGirls starts at $2 a month, and you can get exclusive bonus episodes, invites to special Zoom events, and more. Speaking of do-goodery, if you like Andy's Girls, rate the podcast 5 stars. An important thing to keep in mind if you like the pod in any way, that unfortunately, due to the metrics that Apple Podcasts has assigned, anything less than 5 stars, even if it's like, oh, this is great, but is a mark against the podcast, which is so unfortunate. And that is the world that we live in. So if you really enjoy the podcast and or want the podcast to do well, Apple Podcast 5-star review means a lot. Always slide into my DMs. I love hearing from you on Instagram at Dame Galley. I think I'm going to start doing Instagram lives to connect with you guys. So please follow me on IG at Dame Galley. Thanks to Kate Casey for being the light of my life, a woman who supports other women. This has been a wild, fabulous episode, and I'm so excited to get your thoughts on our conversation and more. Some really deep dives, which is what AG is all about. Guys, I hope you're staying safe and sane. Get vaccinated if you can. And I look forward to kikiing with you soon. Bye-bye.